Benito Cereno by Herman Melville. In the year 1799, Captain Amaso Delano of Duxbury in Massachusetts, commanding a large sealer and general trader, lay at anchor with a valuable cargo in the harbor of St. Maria, a small, desert, uninhabited island toward the southern extremity of the long coast of Chile. There he had touched for water. On the second day, not long after dawn, while lying in his berth, his mate came below, informing him that a strange sail was coming into the bay. Ships were then not so plenty in those waters as now. He rose, dressed, and went on deck. The morning was one peculiar to that coast. Everything was mute and calm. Everything gray. The sea, though undulated into long roods of swells, seemed fixed, and was sleeked at the surface like waved lead that has cooled and set in the smelter's mold. The sky seemed a gray surtout. Flights of troubled gray fowl, kith and kin, with flights of troubled gray vapors, among which they were mixed, skimmed low and fitfully over the waters, as swallows over meadows before storms. Shadows present, foreshadowing deeper shadows to come. To Captain Delano's surprise, the stranger, viewed through the glass, showed no colors, though to do so upon entering a haven, however uninhabited in its shores, where but a single other ship might be lying, was the custom among peaceful seamen of all nations. Considering the lawlessness and loneliness of the spot, and the sort of stories at that day associated with those seas, Captain Delano's surprise might have deepened into some uneasiness had he not been a person of a singularly undistrustful good nature, not liable, except on extraordinary and repeated incentives, and hardly then to indulge in personal alarms, any way involving the imputation of malign evil in man. Whether, in view of what humanity is capable, such a trait implies, along with a benevolent heart, more than ordinary quickness and accuracy of intellectual perception, may be left to the wise to determine. But whatever misgivings might have obtruded on first seeing the stranger would almost in any seaman's mind have been dissipated by observing that the ship, in navigating into the harbor, was drawing too near the land, a sunken reef making out off her bow. This seemed to prove her a stranger, indeed, not only to the sealer, but the island. Consequently, she could be no wanted freebooter on that ocean. With no small interest, Captain Delano continued to watch her, a proceeding not much facilitated by the vapors partly mantling the hull, through which the far matin light from her cabin streamed equivocally enough, much like the sun, by this time hemisphered on the rim of the horizon, and apparently in company with the strange ship entering the harbor, which wimpled by the same low, creeping clouds, showed not unlike a Lima's intrigantes, one sinister eye peering across the plaza from the Indian loophole of her dusk, Sayayamanta. It might have been but a deception of the vapors, but the longer the stranger was watched, the more singular appeared her maneuvers. Ere long, it seemed hard to decide whether she meant to come in or no, what she wanted, or what she was about. The wind, which had breezed up a little during the night, was now extremely light and baffling, which the more increased the apparent uncertainty of her movements. Surmising, at last, that it might be a ship in distress, Captain Delano ordered his whaleboat to be dropped, and, much to the wary opposition of his mate, prepared to board her and, at the least, pilot her in. On the night previous, a fishing party of the seamen had gone a long distance to some detached rocks, out of sight from the sealer, and an hour or two before daybreak had returned, having met with no small success. Presuming that the stranger might have been long off soundings, the good captain put several baskets of the fish for presents into his boat, and so pulled away. From her continuing too near the sunken reef, deeming her in danger, calling to his men, he made all haste to apprise those on board of their situation. But sometime ere the boat came up, the wind, light though it was, having shifted, had headed the vessel off, as well as partly broken the vapors from about her. Upon gaining a less remote view, the ship, when made signally visible on the verge of the leaden-hued swells, with the shreds of fog here and there raggedly furrying her, appeared like a whitewashed monastery after a thunderstorm, seen perched upon some dun cliff among the Pyrenees. But it was no purely fanciful resemblance, which now, for a moment, almost led Captain Delano to think that nothing less than a shipload of monks was before him. Peering over the bulwarks were what really seemed, in the hazy distance, throngs of dark cowls, while fitfully revealed through the open portholes, other dark moving figures were dimly descried, as of black friars pacing the cloisters. Upon a still nigher approach, this appearance was modified, and the true character of the vessel was plain: a Spanish merchantman of the first class, carrying Negro slaves, amongst other valuable freight, from one colonial port to another. A very large, and in its time, a very fine vessel, such as in those days were at intervals encountered along the main. Sometimes superseded Acapulco treasure ships, or retired frigates of the Spanish King's Navy, which, like superannuated Italian palaces, still, under a decline of masters, preserved signs of former state. As the whaleboat drew more and more nigh, the cause of the peculiar pipe-clayed aspect of the stranger was seen in the slovenly neglect pervading her. The spars, ropes, and great part of the bulwarks looked woolly from long unacquaintance with the scraper, tar, and the brush. Her keel seemed laid, her ribs put together, and she launched from Ezekiel's valley of dry bones. In the present business in which she was engaged, the ship's general model and rig appeared to have undergone no material change from their original warlike and Froissart pattern. However, no guns were seen. The tops were large and were railed about with what had once been an octagonal network, all now in sad disrepair. These tops hung overhead like three ruinous aviaries, in one of which was seen perched on a ratlin, a white noddy, a strange fowl, so called from its lethargic somnambulistic character, being frequently caught by hand at sea. Battered and moldy, the castellated forecastle seemed some ancient turret, long ago taken by assault and then left to decay. Toward the stern, two high-raised quarter galleries, the balustrades here and there covered with dry, tindery sea moss, opening out from the unoccupied state cabin, whose deadlights, for all the mild weather, were hermetically closed and caulked, these tenantless balconies hung over the sea as if it were the Grand Venetian Canal. But the principal relic of faded grandeur was the ample oval of the shield-like stern piece, intricately carved with the arms of Castile and Leon, medallioned about by groups of mythological or symbolic devices. Uppermost and central of which was a dark satyr in a mask, holding his foot on the prostrate neck of a writhing figure, likewise masked. Whether the ship had a figurehead or only a plain beak was not quite certain, owing to canvas wrapped about the part, either to protect it while undergoing a refurbishing, or else decently to hide its decay. Rudely painted or chalked, as in a sailor freak, along the forward side of a sort of pedestal below the canvas, was the sentence, "Seguid vuestro jefe," follow your leader. While upon the tarnished headboards nearby appeared in stately capitals, once gilt, the ship's name, San Dominique, each letter streakingly corroded with tricklings of copper spike rust, while, like morning weeds, dark festoons of seagrass slimily swept to and fro over the name with every hearse-like roll of the hull. As, at last, the boat was hooked from the bow along toward the gangway amidship, its keel, while yet some inches separated from the hull, harshly grated as on a sunken coral reef. It proved a huge bunch of conglobated barnacles adhering below the water to the side like a wen. A token of baffling airs and long calms passed somewhere in those seas. Climbing the side, the visitor was at once surrounded by a clamorous throng of whites and blacks, but the latter outnumbering the former more than could have been expected, Negro transportation ship as the stranger in port was. But, in one language, and as with one voice, all poured out a common tale of suffering, in which the negresses, of whom there were not a few, exceeded the others in their dolorous vehemence. The scurvy, together with the fever, had swept off a great part of their number, more especially the Spaniards. Off Cape Horn, they had narrowly escaped shipwreck. Then, for days together, they had lain tranced without wind. Their provisions were low, their water next to none. Their lips that moment were baked. While Captain Delano was thus made the mark of all eager tongues, his one eager glance took in all faces with every other object about him. Always upon first boarding a large and populous ship at sea, especially a foreign one, with a nondescript crew such as Lascars or Manila men, the impression varies in a peculiar way from that produced by first entering a strange house with strange inmates in a strange land. Both house and ship, the one by its walls and blinds, the other by its high bulwarks like ramparts, hoard from view their interiors till the last moment. But in the case of the ship there is this addition, that the living spectacle it contains, upon its sudden and complete disclosure, has in contrast with the blank ocean which zones it, something of the effect of enchantment. The ship seems unreal. These strange costumes, gestures, and faces but a shadowy tableau just emerged from the deep, which directly must receive back what it gave. Perhaps it was some such influence, as above is attempted to be described, which, in Captain Delano's mind, heightened whatever, upon a staid scrutiny, might have seemed unusual, especially the conspicuous figures of four elderly grizzled Negroes, their heads like black dotted willow tops, who, in venerable contrast to the tumult below them, were crouched, sphinx-like, one on the starboard cat head, another on the larboard, and the remaining pair face to face on the opposite bulwarks above the main chains. They each had bits of unstranded old junk in their hands, and, with a sort of stoical self-content, were picking the junk into oakum, a small heap of which lay by their sides. They accompanied the task with a continuous, low, monotonous chant, droning and drooling away like so many gray-headed bagpipers playing a funeral march. The quarterdeck rose into an ample elevated poop, upon the forward verge of which lifted, like the oakum pickers, some 8 feet above the general throng, sat along in a row separated by regular spaces, the cross-legged figures of 6 other blacks, each with a rusty hatchet in his hand, which, with a bit of brick and a rag, he was engaged like a scullion in scouring. While between each two was a small stack of hatchets, their rusted edges turned forward, awaiting a like operation. Though occasionally the 4 oakum pickers would briefly address some person or persons in the crowd, yet the 6 hatchet polishers neither spoke to others nor breathed a whisper among themselves, but sat intent upon their task, except at intervals, when with the peculiar love in Negroes of uniting industry with pastime, 2 and 2 they sideways clashed their hatchets together, like cymbals with a barbarous din. All 6, unlike the generality, had the raw aspect of unsophisticated Africans. But that first comprehensive glance, which took in those 10 figures, with scores less conspicuous, rested but an instant upon them. As impatient of the hubbub of voices, the visitor turned in quest of whomsoever it might be that commanded the ship. But as if not unwilling to let nature make known her own case among his suffering charge, or else in despair of restraining it for the time, the Spanish captain, a gentlemanly, reserved-looking, and rather young man to a stranger's eye, dressed with singular richness, but bearing plain traces of recent sleepless cares and disquietudes, stood passively by, leaning against the mainmast, at one moment casting a dreary, spiritless look upon his excited people, at the next, an unhappy glance toward his visitor. By his side stood a black of small stature, in whose rude face, as occasionally like a shepherd's dog, he mutely turned it up into the Spaniard's. Sorrow and affection were equally blended. Struggling through the throng, the American advanced to the Spaniard, assuring him of his sympathies and offering to render whatever assistance might be in his power, to which the Spaniard returned for the present but grave and ceremonious acknowledgments, his national formality dusked by the saturnine mood of ill health. But losing no time in mere compliments, Captain Delano, returning to the gangway, had his basket of fish brought up. And as the wind still continued light, so that some hours at least must elapse ere the ship could be brought to the anchorage, he bade his men return to the sealer and fetch back as much water as the whaleboat could carry, with whatever soft bread the steward might have, all the remaining pumpkins on board, with a box of sugar and a dozen of his private bottles of cider. Not many minutes after the boat's pushing off, to the vexation of all, the wind entirely died away, and the tide, turning, began drifting back the ship helplessly seaward. But trusting this would not long last, Captain Delano sought, with good hopes, to cheer up the strangers, feeling no small satisfaction that, with persons in their condition, he could, thanks to his frequent voyages along the Spanish main, converse with some freedom in their native tongue. While left alone with them, he was not long in observing some things tending to heighten his first impressions. But surprise was lost in pity, both for the Spaniards and blacks, alike evidently reduced from scarcity of water and provisions. while long-continued suffering seemed to have brought out the less good-natured qualities of the Negroes, besides at the same time impairing the Spaniards' authority over them. But under the circumstances, precisely this condition of things was to have been anticipated. In armies, navies, cities, or families, in nature herself, nothing more relaxes good order than misery. Still, Captain Delano was not without the idea that had Benito Cereno been a man of greater energy, misrule would hardly have come to the present pass. But the debility, constitutional or induced by hardships, bodily and mental, of the Spanish captain was too obvious to be overlooked. A prey to settled dejection, as if long mocked with hope, he would not now indulge it. Even when it had ceased to be a mock, the prospect of that day, or evening at furthest, lying at anchor, with plenty of water for his people, and a brother captain to counsel and befriend, seemed in no perceptible degree to encourage him. His mind appeared unstrung, if not still more seriously affected. Shut up in these oaken walls, chained to one dull round of command, whose unconditionality cloyed him, like some hypochondriac abbot, he moved slowly about, at times suddenly pausing, starting, or staring, biting his lip, biting his fingernail, flushing, paling, twitching his beard, with other symptoms of an absent or moody mind. This distempered spirit was lodged, as before hinted, in as distempered a frame. He was rather tall, but seemed never to have been robust, and now with nervous suffering was almost worn to a skeleton. A tendency to some pulmonary complaint appeared to have been lately confirmed. His voice was like that of one with lungs half gone, hoarsely suppressed, a husky whisper. No wonder that, as in this state he tottered about, his private servant apprehensively followed him. Sometimes the Negro gave his master his arm, or took his handkerchief out of his pocket for him, performing these and similar offices with that affectionate zeal which transmute into something filial or fraternal acts in themselves but menial, and which has gained for the Negro the repute of making the most pleasing body servant in the world. One, too, whom a master need be on no stiffly superior terms with, but may treat with familiar trust, less a servant than a devoted companion. Marking the noisy indocility of the blacks in general, as well as what seemed the sullen inefficiency of the whites, it was not without humane satisfaction that Captain Delano witnessed the steady good conduct of Babo. But the good conduct of Babo, hardly more than the ill behavior of others, seemed to withdraw the half-lunatic Don Benito from his cloudy languor. Not that such precisely was the impression made by the Spaniard on the mind of his visitor. The Spaniard's individual unrest was, for the present, but noted as a conspicuous feature in the ship's general affliction. Still, Captain Delano was not a little concerned at what he could not help taking for the time to be Don Benito's unfriendly indifference toward himself. The Spaniard's manner, too, conveyed a sort of sour and gloomy disdain, which he seemed at no pains to disguise. But this, the American in charity, ascribed to the harassing effects of sickness, since, in former instances, he had noted that there are peculiar natures on whom prolonged physical suffering seems to cancel every social instinct of kindness. As if forced to black bread themselves, they deemed it but equity that each person coming nigh them should, indirectly by some slight or affront, be made to partake of their fare. But ere long, Captain Delano bethought him that, indulgent as he was at the first in judging the Spaniard, he might not, after all, have exercised charity enough. At bottom, it was Don Benito's reserve which displeased him. But the same reserve was shown towards all but his faithful personal attendant. Even the formal reports, which, according to sea usage, were at stated times made to him by some petty underling, either a white, mulatto, or black, he hardly had patience enough to listen to without betraying contemptuous aversion. His manner upon such occasion was, in its degree, not unlike that which might be supposed to have been his imperial countryman's Charles V, just previous to the anchoritish retirement of that monarch from the throne. This splenetic disrelish of his place was evinced in almost every function pertaining to it. Proud as he was moody, he condescended to no personal mandate. Whatever special orders were necessary, their delivery was delegated to his body servant, who in turn transferred them to their ultimate destination through runners, alert Spanish boys or slave boys, like pages or pilot fish, with an easy call continually hovering round Don Benito. So that to have beheld this undemonstrative invalid gliding about, apathetic and mute, no landsman could have dreamed that in him was lodged a dictatorship beyond which, while at sea, there was no earthly appeal. Thus, the Spaniard regarded in his reserve seemed the involuntary victim of mental disorder. But in fact, his reserve might in some degree have proceeded from design. If so, then here was evinced the unhealthy climax of that icy, though conscientious, policy more or less adopted by all commanders of large ships, which except in signal emergencies, obliterates like the manifestation of sway with every trace of sociality, transforming the man into a block, or rather into a loaded cannon, which, until there is call for thunder, has nothing to say. Viewing him in this light, it seemed but a natural token of the perverse habit induced by a long course of such hard self-restraint that notwithstanding the present condition of his ship, the Spaniard should still persist in a demeanor which, however harmless or it may be appropriate in a well-appointed vessel such as the Saint-Dominique, might have been at the outset of the voyage, was anything but judicious now. But the Spaniard, perhaps, thought that it was with captains as with gods. Reserve, under all events, must still be their cue. But probably this appearance of slumbering dominion might have been but an attempted disguise to conscious imbecility, not deep policy, but shallow device. But be all this as it might, whether Don Benito's manner was designed or not, the more Captain Delano noted its pervading reserve, the less he felt uneasiness at any particular manifestation of that reserve toward himself. Neither were his thoughts taken up by the captain alone. Wonted to the quiet orderliness of the sealer's comfortable family of a crew, the noisy confusion of the San Dominique's suffering host repeatedly challenged his eye. Some prominent breaches, not only of discipline but of decency, were observed. These Captain Delano could not but ascribe, in the main, to the absence of those subordinate deck officers to whom, along with higher duties, is entrusted what may be styled the police department of a populous ship. True, the old oakum pickers appeared at times to act the part of monitorial constables to their countrymen, the blacks. But though occasionally succeeding in allaying trifling outbreaks now and then between man and man, they could do little or nothing toward establishing general quiet. The San Dominique was in the condition of a transatlantic emigrant ship, among whose multitude of living freight are some individuals, doubtless as little troublesome as crates and bales. But the friendly remonstrances of such with their ruder companions are of not so much avail as the unfriendly arm of the mate. What the San Dominique wanted was what the emigrant ship was, stern superior officers. But on these decks, not so much as a fourth mate was to be seen. The visitor's curiosity was roused to learn the particulars of those mishaps which had brought about such absenteeism with its consequences, because, though deriving some inkling of the voyage from the whales which at the first moment had greeted him, yet of the details no clear understanding had been had. The best account would doubtless be given by the captain. Yet at the first, the visitor was loath to ask it, unwilling to provoke some distant rebuff. But plucking up the courage, he at last accosted Don Benito, renewing the expression of his benevolent interest, adding that did he, Captain Delano, but know the particulars of the ship's misfortunes, he would perhaps be better able in the end to relieve them. Would Don Benito favor him with the whole story? Don Benito faltered. Then, like some somnambulist suddenly interfered with, vacantly stared at his visitor, and ended by looking down on the deck. He maintained this posture so long that Captain Delano, almost equally disconcerted and involuntarily almost as rude, turned suddenly from him, walking forward to accost one of the Spanish seamen for the desired information. But he had hardly gone 5 paces when, with a sort of eagerness, Don Benito invited him back, regretting his momentary absence of mind and professing readiness to gratify him. While most part of the story was being given, the two captains stood on the after part of the main deck, a privileged spot, no one being near but the servant. "It is now 190 days, began the Spaniard in his husky whisper, "that this ship, well-officered and well-manned, with several cabin passengers, some 50 Spaniards in all, sailed from Buenos Aires bound to Lima, with the general cargo, hardware, Paraguay tea and the like, and," pointing forward, "that parcel of Negroes, now not more than 150, as you see, but then numbering over 300 souls. Off Cape Horn, we had heavy gales. In one moment, by night, 3 of my best officers with 15 sailors were lost, with the main yard, the spars snapping under them in the slings as they sought with heavers to beat down the icy sail. To lighten the hull, the heavier sacks of Mata were thrown into the sea, with most of the water pipes lashed on deck at the time. In this last necessity, it was combined with the prolonged detentions afterward experienced, which eventually brought about our chief causes of suffering. When..." Here, there was a sudden fainting attack of his cough, brought on no doubt by his mental distress. His servant sustained him, and drawing a cordial from his pocket, placed it to his lips. He a little revived, but unwilling to leave him unsupported while yet imperfectly restored, the black, with one arm, still encircled his master, at the same time keeping his eye fixed on his face, as if to watch for the first sign of complete restoration, or relapse, as the event might prove. The Spaniard proceeded, but brokenly and obscurely, as one in a dream. "Oh my God, rather than pass through what I have, with joy I would have hailed the most terrible gales, but..." His cough returned, and with increased violence. This subsided. With reddening lips and closed eyes, he fell heavily against his supporter. His mind wanders. He was thinking of the plague that followed the gales. Plaintively sighed the servant, "My poor, poor master," wringing one hand and with the other wiping the mouth. "But be patient, senor," again turning to Captain Delano, "these fits do not last long. Master will soon be himself." Don Benito, reviving, went on. But as this portion of the story was very brokenly delivered, the substance only will here be set down. It appeared that after the ship had been many days tossed in storms off the Cape, the scurvy broke out, carrying off numbers of the whites and blacks, When at last they had worked round into the Pacific, their spars and sails were so damaged and so inadequately handled by the surviving mariners, most of whom were become invalids, that unable to lay her northerly course by the wind, which was powerful, the unmanageable ship, for successive days and night, was blown northwestward, where the breeze suddenly deserted her, in unknown waters, to sultry calms. The absence of the water pipes now proved as fatal to life as before their presence had menaced it, induced, or at least aggravated by the more than scanty allowance of water, a malignant fever followed the scurvy. With the excessive heat of the lengthened calm making such short work of it as to sweep away, as by billows, whole families of the Africans, and yet a larger number, proportionably, of the Spaniards, including, by a luckless fatality, every remaining officer on board. Consequently, in the smart west winds eventually following the calm, the already rent sails, having to be simply dropped, not furled, at need, had been gradually reduced to the beggar's rags they were now. To procure substitutes for his lost sailors, as well as supplies of water and sails, the captain, at the earliest opportunity, had made for Valdivia, the southernmost civilized port of Chile and South America. But upon nearing the coast, the thick weather had prevented him from so much as sighting that harbor, since which period, almost without a crew, and almost without canvas, and almost without water, and at intervals giving its added dead to the sea, the San Dominique had been battledored about by contrary winds, inveigled by currents, or grown weedy in calms. Like a man lost in woods, more than once she had doubled upon her own track. But throughout these calamities, huskily continued Don Benito, painfully turning in the half-embrace of his servant, I have to thank those Negroes you see, who, though to your inexperienced eyes appear unruly, have indeed conducted themselves with less of restlessness than even their owner could have thought possible under such circumstances. Here he again fell faintly back. Again his mind wandered, but he rallied and less obscurely proceeded. Yes, their owner was quite right in assuring me that no fetters would be needed with his blacks, so that while, as it wont in his transportation, those Negroes have always remained upon deck, not thrust below, as in the Guinea men they have. Also, from the beginning, been freely permitted to range within given bounds at their pleasure. Once more, the faintness returned. His mind roved, but recovering, he resumed. But it is Babo, here to whom, under God, I owe not only my own preservation, but likewise to him, chiefly, the merit is due of pacifying his more ignorant brethren when at intervals tempted to murmurings. Ah, master, sighed the black, bowing his face, don't speak of me. Babo is nothing. What Babo has done was but duty. Faithful fellow, cried Captain Delano. Don Benito, I envy you such a friend. Slave, I cannot call him. As master and man stood before him, the black upholding the white, Captain Delano could not but bethink him of the beauty of that relationship which could present such a spectacle of fidelity on the one hand and confidence on the other. The scene was heightened by the contrast in dress, denoting their relative positions. The Spaniard wore a loose Chile jacket of dark velvet, white small clothes and stockings with silver buckles at the knee and instep, a high crown sombrero of fine grass, a slender sword, silver mounted, hung from a knot in his sash, the last being an almost invariable adjunct, more for utility than ornament, of a South American gentleman's dress to this hour. Excepting when his occasional nervous contortions brought about disarray, there was a certain precision in his attire, curiously at variance with the unsightly disorder around, especially in the belittered ghetto forward of the mainmast, wholly occupied by the blacks. The servant wore nothing but wide trousers, apparently from their coarseness and patches made out of some old topsail. They were clean and confined at the waist by a bit of unstranded rope, which with his composed, deprecatory air at times made him look something like a begging friar of St. Francis. However unsuitable for the time and place, at least in the blunt-thinking American's eyes, and however strangely surviving in the midst of all his afflictions, the toilette of Don Benito might not, in fashion at least, have gone beyond the style of the day among South Americans of his class. Though on the present voyage, sailing from Buenos Aires, he had avowed himself a native and resident of Chile, whose inhabitants had not so generally adopted the plain coat and once plebeian pantaloons, but, with a becoming modification, adhered to their provincial costume, picturesque as any in the world. Still, relatively to the pale history of the voyage and his own pale face, there seemed something so incongruous in the Spaniard's apparel as almost to suggest the image of an invalid courtier tottering about London streets in the time of the plague. The portion of the narrative which perhaps most excited interest, as well as some surprise, considering the latitudes in question, was the long calms spoken of, and more particularly the ships so long drifting about. Without communicating the opinion, of course, the American could not but impute at least part of the detentions both to clumsy seamanship and faulty navigation. Eyeing Don Benito's small, yellow hands, he easily inferred that the young captain had not got into command at the hawse hole, but the cabin window. And if so, why wonder at incompetence in youth, sickness, and gentility united? But drowning criticism in compassion, after a fresh repetition of his sympathies, Captain Delano, having heard out his story, not only engaged as in the first place to see Don Benito and his people supplied in their immediate bodily needs, but also now further promised to assist him in procuring a large permanent supply of water, as well as some sails and rigging. And though it would involve no small embarrassment to himself, yet he would spare three of his best seamen for temporary deck officers, so that without delay the ship might proceed to Concepcion, there fully to refit for Lima, her destined port. Such generosity was not without its effect, even upon the invalid. His face lighted up, eager and hectic. He met the honest glance of his visitor. With gratitude, he seemed overcome. "This excitement is bad for master," whispered the servant, taking his arm and with soothing words gently drawing him aside. When Don Benito returned, the American was pained to observe that his hopefulness, like the sudden kindling in his cheek, was but febrile and transient. Ere long, with a joyless mien, looking up towards the poop, the host invited his guest to accompany him there for the benefit of what little breath of wind might be stirring. As during the telling of the story, Captain Delano had once or twice started at the occasional cymballing of the hatchet polishers, wondering why such an interruption should be allowed, especially in that part of the ship and in the ears of an invalid. And moreover, as the hatchets had anything but an attractive look, and the handlers of them still less so, it was therefore, to tell the truth, not without some reluctance, or even shrinking, it may be, that Captain Delano, with apparent complacence, acquiesced in his host's invitation. The more so, since with an untimely caprice of punctilio, rendered distressing by his cadaverous aspect, Don Benito, with Castilian bows, solemnly insisted upon his guests preceding him up the ladder leading to the elevation, where one on each side of the last step sat for armorial supporters and sentries two of the ominous file. Gingerly enough stepped good Captain Delano between them, and in the instant of leaving them behind, like one running the gauntlet, he felt an apprehensive twitch in the calves of his legs. But when facing about, he saw the whole file, like so many organ grinders still stupidly intent on their work. Unmindful of everything beside, he could not but smile at his late fidgety panic. Presently, while standing with his host looking forward upon the decks below, he was struck by one of those instances of insubordination previously alluded to. Three black boys with two Spanish boys were sitting together on the hatches, scraping a rude wooden platter in which some scanty mess had recently been cooked. Suddenly, one of the black boys, enraged at a word dropped by one of his white companions, seized the knife and, though called to forbear by one of the oakum pickers, struck the lad over the head, inflicting a gash from which blood flowed. In amazement, Captain Delano inquired what this meant, to which the pale Don Benito dully muttered that it was merely the sport of the lad. "Pretty serious sport, truly," rejoined Captain Delano. "Had such a thing happened on board the Bachelor's Delight, instant punishment would have followed." At these words, the Spaniards turned upon the American one of his sudden, staring, half-lunatic looks. Then, relapsing into his torpor, answered, "Doubtless, doubtless, senor." "Is it," thought Captain Delano, "that this hapless man is one of those paper captains I've known, who by policy wink at what by power they cannot put down? I know no sadder sight than a commander who has little of command but the name." "I should think, Don Benito," he now said, glancing towards the oakum picker who had sought to interfere with the boys, "that you would find it advantageous to keep all your blacks employed, especially the younger ones, no matter at what useless task, and no matter what happens to the ship. Why, even with my little band, I find such a course indispensable. I once kept a crew on my quarterdeck thrumming mats for my cabin when, for 3 days, I had given up my ship, mats, men, and all for a speedy loss, owing to the violence of a gale, in which we could do nothing but helplessly drive before it." "Doubtless, doubtless," murmured Don Benito. "But," continued Captain Delano, again glancing upon the oakum pickers and then at the hatchet polishers nearby, "I see you keep some, at least, of your host employed." "Yes," was again the vacant response. "Those old men there, shaking their pows from their pulpits," continued Captain Delano, pointing to the oakum pickers, "seem to act the part of old dominies to the rest, little heeded as their admonitions are at times. Is this voluntary on their part, Don Benito, or have you appointed them shepherds to your flock of black sheep?" "What posts they fill, I appointed them," rejoined the Spaniard in an acrid tone, as if resenting some supposed satiric reflection. "And these others, these Ashanti conjurers here," continued Captain Delano, rather uneasily eyeing the brandished steel of the hatchet polishers, where in spots it had been brought to a shine. "This seems a curious business they are at, Don Benito." "In the gales we met," answered the Spaniard, "what of our general cargo was not thrown overboard was much damaged by the brine. Since coming into calm weather, I have had several cases of knives and hatchets daily brought up for overhauling and cleaning." "A prudent idea, Don Benito. You are part owner of ship and cargo, I presume. But none of the slaves, perhaps?" "I am owner of all you see," impatiently returned Don Benito. "Except the main company of blacks, who belong to my late friend, Alexandro Arando." As he mentioned this name, his air was heartbroken. His knees shook. His servant supported him. Thinking he divined the cause of such unusual emotion, to confirm his surmise, Captain Delano, after a pause, said, "And may I ask, Don Benito, whether since a while ago you spoke of some cabin passengers, the friend whose loss so afflicts you, at the outset of the voyage accompanied his blacks? Yes. But died of the fever. Died of the fever. Oh, could I but... Again quivering, the Spaniard paused. Pardon me, said Captain Delano, lowly, but I think that by a sympathetic experience I conjecture, Don Benito, what it is that gives the keener edge of your grief. It was once my hard fortune to lose, at sea, a dear friend, my own brother, then supercargo. Assured of the welfare of his spirit, its departure I could have borne like a man. But the honest eye, that honest hand, both of which had so often met mine, and that warm heart, all, like scraps to the dogs, to throw all to the sharks. It was then I vowed never to have for fellow voyager a man I loved, unless unbeknown to him, I had provided every requisite in case of a fatality for embalming his mortal part for interment on shore. Were your friend's remains now on board this ship, Don Benito, not thus strangely would the mention of his name affect you. On board this ship? Echoed the Spaniard. Then, with horrified gestures, as directed against some specter, he unconsciously fell into the ready arms of his attendant, who, with a silent appeal toward Captain Delano, seemed beseeching him not again to broach a theme so unspeakably distressing to his master. This poor fellow now, thought the pained American, is the victim of that sad superstition which associates goblins with the deserted body of man, as ghosts with an abandoned house. How unlike are we made! What to me, in like case, would have been a solemn satisfaction, the bare suggestion even terrifies the Spaniard into this trance. Poor Alejandro Aranda! What would you say, could you hear or see your friend, who on former voyages when you for months were left behind has, I dare say, often longed and longed for one peep at you, now transported with terror at the least thought of having you anyway nigh him?